line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Let's start the week off right on a Monday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. Welcome in Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you coming off a tremendous sports weekend. The NFL draft is in the books. We got the NHL and NBA postseason going on, which good for some, not so good for others. Michael, how are we feeling right now about your 76ers?
Well, I feel like I felt all along. I mean, look, they've never gotten past the second round. They won't get past the first round this year. It's 8 years of this, 10 years total. Naturally blame the fans. But the reality here is, you know, this has been an ongoing problem for me for a long, long time, Stormy, because I just don't think you can win with when your best player is your laziest player, when he has got incredible talent, great jump shooter, right? But when you can't rebound the ball, no rebounds, no rings. Isn't that what the Lakers used to say all the time? They can't rebound. They have the 7'4", 7'2" guy who's bigger than anybody, and they can't get a rebound. Well, but yeah, I don't know if you know this. The ball just bounced the wrong way. That's what was going on there. But I was flying back. I watched it. I didn't even react. There wasn't one curse word on crossing America. I promise you, there was none. Very poised. Didn't handle that. It's all good. I loved watching the Clippers and the Mavericks. I thought the Mavericks, you know, made that great comeback and then just didn't have enough gas in the tank to finish it off. I think that's a great series. And then I got to thinking, I don't know how you felt, but what do you do if you're Phoenix? Yeah. You've given away your draft picks. You paid Bradley Beal a ridiculous amount of money. You know, Kevin Durant isn't the same player. Booker's still great. But where are we going? I mean, when are we going to stop this collection of all-star mentality in the NBA and look towards Oklahoma City, which does it right, or Minnesota, which give Tim Connelly a lot of credit? He went up there and rebuilt that team.
Yeah, Michael, has anyone accomplished less with more than the Phoenix Suns right now? Booker, KD, Bradley Beal, when they were on the floor together in this series, they were minus 51. That was the worst of any three players in the playoffs at all to this point. Michael, that's crazy to think about the money that you've invested in these three players. And when they're on the floor, this is the group that you thought was going to take you to an NBA championship. And instead, out of the first round, they're the worst group of three that we've seen, period.
Well, I mean, at some point, when do you realize that, you know, maybe this collecting of all-stars isn't the right way to build a team?
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't work. You know, Durant's complaining that he doesn't know where he fits on the offense. I find that hard to believe. I mean, poor Frank Vogel, he's going to pay a price for this. I'm sure it'll be his fault. You know, when they haven't looked like a good team, we said it last year when they put this together, we said, look, they're going to have to really have depth and stay healthy. They have to find it somewhere because we know this doesn't work.
So
you have to have three great players on a team, but you have to play like a team. It's like Philadelphia's problem. How many years have we heard, and you've heard it too, well, they just have to get the right players around Embiid. Well, who are they? We've been 8 years. Where do you come from? You can't get the right players around Embiid because he's 7'2". And you would think if we just surround him with jump shooters, everything will be good. But he's one of the jump shooters. He's shooting from 3-point line. You know, so I think to me, it's team building is an art in the NBA, and you better be good at it. Conley in Minnesota is good at it. That's pretty clear. Sam Presti in Oklahoma City, he's good at it. That's pretty clear. Philadelphia, not so good at it.
Credit Anthony Edwards, by the way, as well, in that game and in this series. He had 40 points, 31 of those 40 coming in the second half against the Suns, a career high 7 made threes. He averaged 38 points on the Suns' home court. As the Timberwolves get their first sweep in the postseason, they knock off the Suns that final game, 122-116. The 76ers' final score, for anyone who missed it, they fall 97-92. For now, a 3-1 hole, which is something they have never been able to get out of in the postseason, Michael. And I do want to play like, don't yell at me, okay? But I do want to play a little bit of devil's advocate here for Joel Embiid, who played an entire second half for the first time in his career, regular season or postseason. Of course he's gassed, but he has to stay on the court because the minute he sits on the bench, the other team goes on a 10-0 run. Like, nobody else can do anything outside of him. So I do feel from him from that standpoint that everything is on his shoulders. He's still recovering from an injury when he was injured and rehabbing. Obviously, the conditioning already isn't there, so now it's even worse. So, of course they're struggling. Of course he's struggling.
Well, whose fault's that? I mean, look, you sign Mo Bamba in the offseason. You give Pat, you match the Utah deal to Paul Reed, and then you don't play him. I mean, you know, look, here's the reality of it is, I mean, you should rest him in the first half. Because one thing that we know, what the evidence has come in overwhelmingly, whether he plays 44 minutes, whether he plays 41, whatever he plays, the fourth quarter has been a disaster. He's gassed by the fourth quarter. You know, and so he plays the entire first quarter. Maybe you play him 6 minutes. Maybe you rest him in the first quarter. And then you know that you can't rest him in the fourth quarter. You need him. But when he turns down jump shots that he typically would make, and then he goes to the rim and he gets it stuffed, he's got nothing. I mean, Doris Burke said it so well. He's gassed in pregame. No. I mean, the guy has never been in shape, Stormy. This is the difference between, and all your criticism is correct, but the difference between me and you is this being in shape is always masqueraded around some other ailment. He's got a bad knee, or he's got a bad elbow. He's got, can't see. He's got a worse, like, he never gets in shape. He's never changed his body. And so, therefore, as talented as he is and as remarkable as he is, you fall well short. And for somebody who spent 40 years of his life evaluating talent, you know, I'd gravitate away from guys who have elite talent but no competitive fiber. And look at his fourth quarter and look at his playoff numbers.
All fair points. And now as they try to work their way out of this 3-1 hole, they're a 4-point dog at the Garden coming up tomorrow, total 203.5. And if Joel Embiid didn't like the crowd in Philly, which we'll talk about a little bit more later, just wait until they're back there in New York.
Always an excuse.
Michael, because
always an excuse.
Because we're talking about talent evaluations and building teams, that's a huge staple of what was going on this weekend in Detroit with all of these NFL teams in the draft. We finally have everybody selected, cemented in what's going to happen moving forward. Now that we're through the weekend, is there one team that you walked away thinking, wow, they did a really good job? And again, this is all on paper. We are not on grass yet. We don't know what these players are going to be like for another 2-3 years. But from what you saw from an evaluation standpoint, who did the best?
You know, I really – look, Pittsburgh has won 10 games without quarterbacking with a bad team. With guys on defense, you're like, whoa, what is this? But they add Patrick Queen this offseason. They get what I think is one of the better defense players in the draft, you know, which I think was critical for them. They get Peyton Wilson from North Carolina State, who I'm sure you've seen, Stormy, many times, right? This kid's all over the field making tackles. And that's something that this Pittsburgh Steelers team has needed really badly is to replace Ryan Shazier. He is this defense that they run in Pittsburgh, going back to Dick LeBeau, going back in time, relies on inside-out speed, and they haven't really had it with Landon Roberts. They really haven't with Cole Holcomb. They've tried to sign guys. It just hasn't worked. Miles Jack, all those guys. This time, I think they have it with Queen and now with Wilson. And we know they're going to be good if T.J. Watt's healthy on defense. And then offensively, you know, one of the struggles has been this offensive line. But they draft a really good center from West Virginia, Jack Frazier. He's going to be a plug and play, 1,200 plays. Fatumi is going to come in there. Fatuna is going to go in there and start at left tackle to go with Broderick Jones, another starting right tackle, first-round pick last year. And then they get Roman Wilson as the third receiver in the third round, which I think he'll give them as many plays as Rome Odunze will give the Bears because they'll be able to play. Now, will he play better than Rome? I don't know. But this team's ready to go. And the fact that Arthur Smith, who gets so much critique in terms of his head coaching acumen, that he's a good offensive coordinator. Like, this team's ready to go. I like this team a lot on paper. And we know that Tomlin wins 10 games with his eyes closed.
Take that over every year. If you've been betting against him, you've been losing tickets. Well, let's go to the Bears, though, who you mentioned, who at the number one overall pick, obviously take Caleb Williams as expected, get the best player in the draft based on, you know, statistical information. He's been favored to be in that spot for the last 2 years. They go get Rome Odunze at 9 to add to what is already seeming to be a very talented, offensive, skilled group for Chicago. Only made 5 picks, but all 5, to me at least, seem like they can help them now. They get the offensive lineman from Yale, who I'm not going to even pretend to try to say his name, in the third, who's gotten really good reviews, although obviously it's a big step up from Yale to the NFL step in terms up. Of competition. And fifth round flyer on pass rusher Austin Booker out of Kansas. They take Troy Taylor, the punter from Iowa, who Lord knows that guy's had reps. What were your thoughts on the Bears draft as a whole?
Well, look, it's all going to come down. We know they're going to be better offensively. I mean, in the last five games of the year, the most points they scored was 17 points, right? I mean, so they couldn't move the ball. And they've obviously addressed that with Keenan Allen gives them a third down player. Adunze, they're going to have to be an 11 team, which I'm not sure will work. I thought they should have gone more towards the defensive end. They feel like their defense is ready to go. Now, when you look at the second half of the season, you say, well, they play good defense. Well, I'm always a concern because when you're so bad on offense, the other team doesn't try to kind of exploit you. Opening day, when everybody was healthy, they gave up 38 points at home to Green Bay. Now, can they improve? Sure. But I do agree with you. They're going to be better offensively, which is going to make their defense better. I would have taken the pass rusher. I would have taken Lutua, mm-hmm. or I would have taken Murphy with the ninth pick and not another receiver. But that, you know, that's how the art of team building in the NFL today is all about. It's all about the ability to find receivers.
I was really surprised to see, honestly, how much a lot of those talented edge rushers and defensive linemen fell, considering Leatu Latu is the first off the board at, 15? The win total for the Chicago Bears, yeah. Michael, 8.5. Do you expect, you know, year one under Caleb Williams for this Chicago team to have a winning season?
Well, look, it's going to get bet to 9. If you like it, you better take it right now. You know, because I think we know Bear fans. I said this on Mitch and Pauly today. They put their money where their mouth is. They're going to bet the over here because they're so excited about their team. And they're going to bet Caleb to be Rookie of the Year. You're not going to get better numbers than you're going to get today for the Bears.
Plus 200 for Caleb Williams to be that offensive Rookie of the Year. We're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. Stick around. Lots more draft and NBA conversation on the way.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's Kentucky Derby time, ladies and gentlemen. Are you ready for the greatest 2 minutes in sports? We'll saddle up with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. Right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when they opt in using the code HORSE, H-O-R-S-E. Just deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Download DK Horse now to join the Run for the Roses action only on the DK Horse app. And you know, we talked a little bit about the Kentucky Derby upcoming with Thomas Gable. Later on this week, we'll have Mike Somich, who is all in on horse racing, dropping Sama bombs on the regular. Love it. Yeah. So it's about that time, Michael, indeed.
It is. It is. I love it. It's always, I mean, I'm not much of a horse. I'm not a better period, but I love the horse racing. I love watching these animals run. It's just absolutely beautiful. It's majestic. I regret, you know, when I was scouting on the road, I regret not being able to go to Lexington and just stare at Secretariat. You know, mm-hmm. they said the horse was, the big red was so powerful and so beautiful to look at that, you know, when you're in Lexington, the University of Kentucky, to go over to Louisville, it's not that you can kind of get there, but, you know, you're always in a rush to do something. And I regret, that's one of the things I regret. I have on my board here in the office, Secretariat, in the Belmont with 23 lengths and the jockey's still hitting his butt to get him to go faster. I love that.
It's great. I personally watch it for the names. I make my bets in horse racing based on names, and maybe that's not the way that I should go about it, but that's one of those for fun events, in my opinion. I love horse racing. I always try to get out to Del Mar in the summertime with my family living out there in San Diego, so that should be fun. Speaking of names, there were a lot of them called this past weekend in the NFL draft, and over the last week or so, you and I and Femi have been going through each division and what we think they should do and what they need to do in the NFL draft to help take a positive step in 2024. Now that we have those answers, we're going to continue the deep dives, but reflecting on what each team did. And we'll start today in the AFC East with the New England Patriots, where QB3 overall in this year's draft is the Patriots' hope for QB1 for the future, drafting Drake May. Even if that means sitting behind Jacoby Brissett in 2024, I know calls did come out about a potential trade, but they wanted to stick with their guy, which is what made it that much more interesting, Michael, that later on in the draft, they also took Joe Milton in the sixth round. When your team has so many other needs, does Joe Milton there make sense?
Well, it doesn't make sense from that, right? I mean, obviously, Bailey Zappe, who they've waived before, is no longer on the team. this is just a project. But here's where it becomes a little bit problematic. How do you have enough time to develop two projects? Drake May is going to require all your time and energy to get him going, you know, because he's really a raw player. He's got potential, but he's got to come away with a lot of improvement. And the same thing with Joe Milton. Joe Milton, University of Michigan, went there, you know, got a tremendous amount of talent, can throw the ball from here to the ocean, but can he play quarterback? Mm-hmm. And that's going to take some time to develop him. And that's where you don't have a lot in the NFL. But look, I don't buy this rhetoric that the Patriots are this depleted roster that they have to rebuild. I mean, look, they would have won 7-8 games if the kicker and the quarterback wouldn't have just been so bad, right? They would have had Jacoby Brissett on the team. They probably would have won 8 games just to manage the game correctly. Got a good running back in Stevenson. You know, they've got a lot of, they have some good offensive linemen. I think the Wallace pick in the third round is critical for them. They need a left tackle. Right. They need a left tackle. Okafor is what Elliott Wolf said would be their left tackle to start the season. We watched him in Pittsburgh. But look, this defense is good, and I think they're going to continue to get good. They didn't really touch the defensive board. They went strictly all offense, which surprised people. Yeah. But to me, that was where they needed the most help. And, you know, they've got to get Polk to play well, who they drafted in the second round. Bourne's a good player, right? I think Bourne's a good player. DeMario Douglas, if he could stay healthy, can run with it after the catch. They've got options. So I think, to me, that's going to be the key. Can they get the left tackle to play really well and develop May?
You mentioned Polk. I did think that was an interesting move, trading down and passing on Ladd McConkey to ultimately get him. They did circle back and get another wide receiver in Javon Baker, the Alabama transfer to UCF in the fourth. But let's go to the Buffalo Bills, who traded out of the first round, handing the Chiefs of all teams Xavier Worthy. But with the first pick in the second round, they take Florida State wide receiver Keon Coleman, big body, physical receiver. When you look through what they did in this year's draft, did they do enough to help Josh Allen? Or are they destined to go try to steal one of my 49ers receivers? What's happening here?
No, I don't think so, Stormy. They don't have the cap room to do that. So, but the other thing I think you've got to take into consideration here is Coleman gives them an outside receiver, right? They have a slot receiver in Samuel. They could put Shakir in there too. And naturally, they're going to be a 12 personnel team with Kincaid and Knox. So they need an inside-outside receiver. And then Mac Hollins is really good in the kicking game, and Mac Hollins can run vertically. Like, Mac Hollins could make some plays with Josh Allen's arm. I think they've done enough. I think, look, they got to stay healthy. The question's going to be, are they good enough on defense? They drafted the young safety, Cole Bishop. They're going to need him to play right away. They signed Mike Evans from the Chiefs to be the starter. You got to believe Bishop's going to beat him out. Same thing with Taylor Rapp. Are they as good at safety as they were when they had Hyde and Poyer? We'll see. And do they have enough pass rush, and can they stay healthy? Look, this is a nickel defense that relies on their ability to play from in front. And that offense is going to have to generate that lead.
The Bills are a +160 favorite to win the division again. Tied to the second shortest shot are the Jets and Dolphins, both at 2-1. New York, I was very proud of them for adding depth on the offensive line, taking Olu Fashanu at number 11 overall after that trade with Minnesota. He's only allowed one sack in his collegiate career. So hopefully that group up front that had 13 different combinations and 64 sacks allowed will give Aaron Rodgers more than 4 plays this year. But overall, what did you think of the Jets draft?
I really thought it was smart, right? We call them the ifers because their ifer situation with 2 30-year-old tackles, especially one Tyron Smith. And they've done it. Like, if he can come in and play and Tyron's the backup, now that won't work because Tyron's got so much money in incentives that he's going to want to get paid. But look, I think it was the smart play. They get the Corley kid from Western Kentucky, very productive. You know, Mike Williams, if he's healthy, helps their receiving core. So a lot of this is going to come down to, can they stay healthy? Remember, they added Riddick to their team to replace Bryce Huff. So they get another pass rusher to come in there. I was surprised they traded John Franklin Myers to Denver. I was surprised by that. But I think at the end of the day, they did a smart thing in getting the left tackle. They needed that badly. And everything else after that is, you know, they draft the quarterback from Florida State. I mean, is that really going to matter? They drafted another running back, Brendan Allen. I think all those are for the 25 team, not the 24 team. Because let's face it, everything's going to come down to that line protecting Aaron Rodgers.
Again, we call them the ifers for a reason. If they stay healthy, this team has a ton of potential and could be a legit contender in the AFC. But if they don't, and if one by one we start seeing guys drop like flies, it could be a disaster, which means bad things for Robert Saleh, who's teetering on the edge there as well. They also, by the way, signed Mekhi Becton to a one-year deal yesterday. Let's round things out with the Miami Dolphins, who I mentioned also 2-1. We've talked ad nauseum about how the way they struggled to beat good teams last year. Did the group they put together here do enough to help them get over that hump a little bit in 2024? Chop Robinson, their first pick in the first round at number 21.
Well, the Chop Robinson protects him from Phillips coming back from an ACL, and same thing with Chubb, right? They signed Shaq Barrett as a protection in that area, and now they get Chop Robinson. And then they needed to replace Robert Hunt. You know, they lost him, so they draft Patrick Paul to be the left tackle, because we know that Teron Armstead's not going to stay healthy the whole year. Look, this is a lot. I mean, we're going to see the Tua contract come in at astronomical numbers here in the future, but I think this team is – for them to beat good teams, can they hold up at the cornerback position? I think that's going to be the key. Can Kendall Fuller be a starting corner? Is Jordan Poyer have anything left? This secondary is going to be tested. They really are, because that was the weak spot. Look, we know they have a really good player in Jalen Ramsey, but you're going to have to cover other guys. We'll see how the adaption of the scheme and how they fit into what they want to do in terms of the new defense coordinator with Anthony Weaver along with Joe Barry. We want to see how that really works out, because they can say Vic worked them too hard, but they didn't play well when Vic was working them hard. They're going to have to prove that they can play better.
This is a division, Michael, that the last couple years, when you just look at the teams, has felt like and seemed like it would be a gauntlet. Once we actually got onto the football field, it wasn't that way as much. It seems like there's a lot more parity in the division. Who do you think is the team to beat right now with those odds of the first three teams so close?
Well, I think Josh Allen's the best quarterback. And so Buffalo has a complete team. You know, and everybody's worried about their receiving core. I'm not. I'm more worried about, can they play good enough on defense in a battle if they go toe-to-toe? Look, let's face it. If you ask the Kansas City Chiefs who gave them the hardest game, and I know it was played in Buffalo, but the Bills by far. The Bills dominated the game. The Bills are kicking themselves. They should have won that game, and if Bass makes the kick, we're in overtime, and who knows?
They should be kicking themselves, because what was everybody talking about after that game was over? If not now, when? If you can't get over the hump of the Chiefs in your own building, then when is it going to happen? And then you lose some talent. So it's worrisome, but I agree with you. As of right now, Buffalo, still that team in the AFC East. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you're looking to bet the NBA smarter tonight, VSiN.com has you covered. In addition to best bets article laid out each and every day from our guy, Jonathan Von Tobel, we've also got top plays based on betting splits, power ratings, and trends from our own Steve Mackinnon. Plenty of daily MLB, NHL postseason action, everything you need in one-stop shop at VSiN.com.
The appointments are lined up.
You waiting for somebody in there?
Got an appointment.
And it's not about what you want to hear, but what you need to hear.
It's not personal. It's strictly business.
It's time you and me had a private talk, winger. Step into my office.
It's Step Into My Office with Michael Lombardi. Mr. Lombardi, we'll see you now.
All right, Michael. Let's talk Kirk Cousins off the ledge here, because 6 weeks ago, he signed a deal with the Atlanta Falcons for 4 years, $100 million guaranteed in the first three. Yet, instead of helping him out, giving him a little defensive support, Atlanta says, no, we are going to take Michael Penix Jr. at number 8 overall. Raheem Morris, their head coach, said Kirk does not have to look over his shoulder every time he throws a bad pass. But we know when he throws a bad pass, the fans are going to be coming out and screaming Michael Penix Jr. What does Cousins need to do to secure his QB1 spot, Michael? And how would you advise him given this situation?
Well, I think, Kurt, you're in a really tough spot, because what you want to do, and I'm sure what you had planned to do, was try to develop the team around your characteristics, right? You want your personality within the team. And I think ultimately this becomes now everybody becomes a general manager. Everybody evaluates practice. Who's better? Who does this? You know, they'll say it'll raise the competition level and they'll get the best out of you. I'm not sure that's the case, because the connectivity between you and the team has to have no doubt, right? The second string quarterback is always the least talented quarterback. It's always pretty clear. In this case, it may not be clear because this kid can throw the football. So what I think you have to do is balance yourself really easily. Difficulty. You've got to show support to the young kid, because if you try to alienate him, the rest of the team's not going to buy into you. They're going to see it. And then you also have to command the team. And you and Raheem have to sit in a room and really go over it and understand that, because there should be some kind of understanding now that he is part of the team. And how do you embrace it? Because what's going to happen in scout team is he's going to look really good, because he's going to look at cards. You throw the ball here, you throw the ball there. There's no pass rush, right? And the players are going to see this, and they're going to say, wow, this kid's really good. So Raheem's got to do a really good job of reinforcing everything to you, and so does Zach Robinson. But you've got to be upfront and honest with everybody. You got to let them know how you feel.
I don't like to say I feel bad for guys that are making the kind of money that Kirk Cousins is, but I feel bad for him in this situation. I feel bad for Michael Penix Jr. in this situation, too, because he might be, if not the most, one of the most NFL-ready quarterbacks of this draft class. And now we hear that he could be sitting for 4 or 5 years if things go well with Kirk. So just very interesting situation. Another quarterback off the board early. Drake May goes number 3 overall to the New England Patriots, Michael. But there is belief and thought process, right, that he doesn't have to go in right away. He needs time to develop and could sit behind Jacoby Brissett this year. Take a listen to Jerod Mayo after the selection.
I don't think many rookies are ready to just jump in and play. And look, at the end of the day, our philosophy is the best players will play. We're not sitting here saying that Drake is our starting quarterback. I think he understands that. He understands the things that he has to get better at. And, you know, with coaching and once again, the hard work and the coaches that we have, the support system from ownership, you know, I think he has a chance to go out there and really play at a high level. You can talk about potential all you want to until you reach it. It really doesn't matter.
That's what my dad always says. Potential doesn't mean blank yet, right? Like, it doesn't mean anything. So what does May need to do to reach that potential, Michael?
Well, he needs to go back and start all over, you know, like just go in there with an open mind and try to learn how to play the position the way they want him to play it, and really spend a lot of time on his fundamentals and his footwork. Like, he's got to really become a technically sound player and not just think he can do it with his athleticism. And don't be in a rush. Not saying don't compete, but just don't be in a rush. Take everything in. Learn from as much as you can. Take mental reps as much as physical reps, because you're going to need it. You're going to need it badly. And go in there, keep your mouth shut, head down, and just do what they tell you to do and work twice as hard at it. And then after 6 months, we're going to see where this goes. Think of yourself as you're on this giant weight loss program. It doesn't matter where you start. It matters where we're going to be in 3 months, right? And so that's going to be the key. You've got to show improvement to yourself every 3 months. I think that's got to be what your goal is. Your goal isn't who's the starter. Your goal is, how do I improve?
Football version of a no-carb diet for Drake May. Got to keep it up. Absolutely.
There you go.
Absolutely. How about Bo Nix here, Michael? Because despite most mocks having Bo Nix as a fringe first rounder, he ends up going number 12 overall to the Denver Broncos. Sean Payton calling him super intelligent and pushed against the assumptions that Denver could have drafted him later. Compared it to the Chiefs situation, taking Patrick Mahomes when they did. Said, oh yeah, people were mad at them, said you could have gotten him later. No, you couldn't. How can Nix live up to that number 12 draft ranking?
Just stop thinking about it, because it only matters how you play, not where you get picked. You can't make anybody happy. Look at Brock Purdy. Seventh pick, last player picked in the draft. He can't make people happy. People still doubt him. So don't worry about what other people think. The only person you really care about is the reason you're in Denver is because what Sean Payton thought. That's the only guy you got to make happy. You got to make him happy, and you got to do what he tells you to do. Everybody else is just block out the noise. Don't even listen to it. And if you win games, you probably won't get any credit, because people have their minds made up about you. So they're going to write that it's the rest of the team that did it, like they did with Brock Purdy. You got to take the Brock Purdy approach. Deal with your teammates, connect with them, and just listen to your head coach and block out all the noise. The people that don't know are the ones you can't let affect you.
Kevin O'Connell, head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, steps into your office, Michael, this offseason. They added Sam Darnold on a one-year, $10 million contract, and then in the draft traded up to 10 to grab J.J. McCarthy. GM Kwesi Adofo-Mensah told reporters that Minnesota would not rush McCarthy's development. So if you are Kevin O'Connell, what should he be looking for and from in J.J. McCarthy if he plans on giving him the reins of the offense at some point?
Well, if he plans on getting him the reins, he's got to give him everything. Like, you can't have two offenses. You can't have the Sam Darnold offense, and you can't have the J.J. McCarthy. You got to see if he can handle it. Volume is what gets most quarterbacks, right? Volume. How much volume you get put on your plate to process and deal with. This is what Sean Payton was talking about when he was talking about Nick's ability intellectually. It's the volume. How much volume, how much of the offense can you handle? Well, if you want to win games and Darnold can handle a lot of it, McCarthy's going to have to handle as much of it as he can. And don't worry about if he makes mistakes. Like, that's the one thing I would tell every one of these young quarterbacks. Make as many mistakes in practice as you possibly can, because they call it practice. Just don't make two mistakes in a row. Just don't make the same mistake over and over again. That's when you lose your credibility. That's when you lose your support system. Learn from your mistakes and move forward. And you have no timetable, JJ. All you have to do is learn what to do and then do it when you figure it out. And take your time, because they've got Darnold there to protect you. And don't try to become a hero overnight.
As much as I talked about J.J. McCarthy throughout this draft process and how I wasn't a believer, it's not that I'm not a believer in J.J. McCarthy. It's that I wasn't a believer in him being a top five pick. I think he's in a great situation in Minnesota, have that time to learn and develop a little bit and see what he becomes. I'm excited for him with the Vikings. Let's go to Phoenix, though, Michael, where the Suns be struggling after getting swept from the Minnesota Timberwolves. Their GM James Jones is in the office after adding Bradley Beal to a team that already included Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. They are out. What's next for the Suns? What would you direct James Jones on for his path in order for them to contend with this big three?
I really like James and have great respect for him. And I think with James, what you have to do is be honest with yourself. Can you make another run with this team? What was wrong with this team that you could not beat Minnesota? And you know that guy in Minnesota who's becoming the second coming of Mr. Jordan is not going anywhere. So how are we going to get out of the West if we can't beat them? And I think you got to be really honest. And then once you're honest with yourself, how do you fix the problem? You can't get away from Beal's deal. Everybody told you, you know, you got to get Beal, you got to get Beal. You listened to it, and it didn't work. Now you got to do what you think will work. And does that mean tear it down? Does that mean trade assets? You can't trade Durant. You're not going to be able to trade Beal. You don't want to trade Booker. I don't know how you solve the problems. You don't have any draft picks. So you got to sit down and say to yourself, either we sell off these picks, we sell off Durant, and we sell off Beal, and we'll eat the money to get picks and just go into the tank, or how do we piece it together? Your owner's not going to want to try to piece it together. He wants to win. But you and I both know old players don't get young.
I mentioned
old players don't get better.
Yeah. Father Time's undefeated, as they say, unless you're Tom Brady. I said it once earlier, and I'll say it again, Michael. When Booker, KD, and Bradley Beal were on the floor together in this series, they were minus 51,
wow,
the worst of any three players on any team in the playoffs here so far. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, VSiN's own Mike Pritchard, former NFL wide receiver, he'll join us, get his thoughts on his former Falcons selection at the top of the draft. We'll be back in a moment.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into the Lombardi Line alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonatoni with you as we continue to break down our thoughts on the NFL draft over the weekend. Now that all of the names have been called, and to help us get into it a little bit farther, we welcome in VSiN's own Mike Pritchard, former NFL wide receiver, a guy who heard his name called early and who you will see has an Atlanta Falcons jersey behind him as a former member of the franchise. So you know where we got to start here, which was the biggest head scratcher for a number of people around the country when they heard Michael Penix Jr.'s name called at number 8 in this year's NFL draft. What was your reaction?
I wasn't shocked. I wasn't surprised either. It was just a roundabout way of what the Falcons are capable of doing. By the way, I'm thinking about taking that jersey down. I got two other jerseys I could put up there.
True.
But I think Raheem Morris is back there and you're trying to stabilize a position. And maybe they want to project that they have a stable situation with the quarterback position now that they have Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix Jr., right? And so I don't know if they can make it work. We'll see. I don't know how front offices think a lot of times. Michael is the best to certainly convey that to everybody out there. But was he the best player available on the board? No. Was he the best quarterback in this draft at that position at that time? No. Is he a fit? When you have a right-handed quarterback and Kirk Cousins, okay, now you're going to switch to a left-handed quarterback and Michael Penix Jr. That doesn't bode well in the locker room, or it doesn't really jive well, because you're talking about two different offenses that way. So to sum it up and to answer your question, I don't know what the hell the Falcons were thinking, to be honest with you.
All right, so let's take it from your point of view. You've been in that locker room. For me as an executive, I want my quarterback to be the leader. I want him to be the hardest worker. I want the team to gravitate towards him. As Bill Walsh once told Steve Young, 1 minute to go, we're down by 4. You go in that huddle, everybody believes you can execute. How does Atlanta create that dynamic when you have two players that one's incredibly talented, the other's played really well? How do they create that dynamic?
Well, it's going to be difficult. And it's a great point by you, Michael, because I think that's what Kirk Cousins was upset about. Not the fact that he's scared that this guy's going to take his position, but he's like, okay, I'm going into a new situation at quarterback in Atlanta. How am I going to take over that locker room now if, you know, you're talking about the future with Michael Penix Jr., but the present and the here and now is with me. And I got to win over this locker room. I got to establish that credibility. So that's what makes it more difficult. I think when you have front offices with one plan, and then the locker room has a different plan, that doesn't work. You know, everybody has to be on the same page. And it just doesn't seem like everybody's on the same page right now. I'll take you back to when I was there. You know, Ken Harrock drafted Brett Favre. And in the locker room, we're like, man, this guy's a gunslinger. God, this guy is incredible. But yet Chris Miller was our starter. And Jerry Glanville wanted Chris to be our starter. So we had to fight that for a little while. And you know, certainly Chris got hurt. Then they bring in Billy Joe Tolliver. We go to the playoffs. But I tell you what, I think as players, we missed out an opportunity to play with a supreme talent. And Harrock recognized that. It's just the coaches didn't give that opportunity to us as players to play that out.
Well, and I keep thinking too, Pritch, from the Michael Penix Jr. vantage of this, how excited you must be to be a top 10 pick. And then you realize where you're going in the situation with Atlanta, where you're already 24 years old. If
right.
Kirk Cousins does have success, you're, and you know, to Terry Fontenot's point after the draft was over, talking about like, hey, if he sits 4 or 5 years, that means things are going well. Okay, that means you're going to pick up a fifth-year option without having seen him, and your quarterback's 50 years old now. Okay, he's only going to be 28, but still, you get what I'm saying here. It's a very unique,
sure,
unique situation that they did after, you know, just 6 weeks ago investing in someone else. I feel for Michael Penix in this situation, too.
Right, and those are headaches that are going to happen for the front office, I believe, because if Michael Penix feels like he needs to be on the field, he's going to force that issue. And Michael Lombardi just brought up, you know, the Steve Young, Joe Montana thing. I mean, Steve Young kind of forced himself onto the field,
yeah,
and that had to happen. And so they traded away Joe Montana, which was the right move for everybody. But, you know, if you're Michael Penix, you're not going to want to sit for 3 or 4 years. And I don't think Atlanta even thought about that.
How do you develop Michael Penix? That's another question,
that's another
Mike,
one.
Right? So usually when you have a void, when you have a void at quarterback, you're developing the quarterback. You have a bridge player that the team knows, and then you're giving this guy all the reps you can possibly give. But
right,
how do you give this guy reps How do you make him a better player? How do you look, here's what I do know, and no one said this, including myself, but it just came to me. The offenses for Kirk Cousins and the offense for Michael Penix are two entirely different offenses.
Exactly.
I'm not saying Kirk Cousins can't throw the ball down the field, but Kirk Cousins is really a pure West Coast guy. This Michael Penix is an over route, deep nine, you know, hard. I mean, it's a different offense. It just doesn't make sense on any basis.
Right. It doesn't make sense. And, you know, everybody's got a plan until they got punched in the mouth. Mm-hmm. Right. And, Atlanta's going to get punched in the mouth sooner than later. I don't know what scared them. The run on quarterbacks, you know, it wasn't even there. I don't know if they were even going to anticipate that happening either, but I can't explain it. You know, they've gone offensive player year after year recently too, which, you know, you're stockpiling a lot of players on that side of the ball. But at what point is your plan going to be realized? At what point are you going to be able to implement whatever plan you think you have?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know who was trying to trade up for Michael Penix at that point, right? Like, they had their choice of whoever was on the board. All the talk about trading up was about J.J. McCarthy or Drake May or even the Raiders and Jaden Daniels. So just very unique and high expectations nonetheless for this Atlanta Falcons team moving into 2024. They're an odds-on favorite in the division, 9.5 win total, minus 300 to make the playoffs this year. Let's look ahead to your position and where some of these wide receivers landed. Any particular landing spot or fit that you found was maybe the best of that first round?
You know, a lot of people are talking about Ladd McConkey going to the Chargers, which that's interesting. That's intriguing. I think Adunze going to Chicago just because of the injury history with Keenan, right? I think you're going to see that guy on the field and you're going to see him in a lot of positions to make plays too with that dynamic quarterback. Neighbors, good luck in New York. good luck out there. I hope New York can bounce back because, you know, he's a great talent too. But Marvin Harrison Jr., the thing that stood out to me about this draft was it was all chalk, right? You think about the mocks and you think about how it really played out, even the trade with JJ going to Minnesota. A lot of people anticipated that. So I wonder if that's going to be predictive for us as bettors later on. That everything in the league is projecting to us as chalk right now. So as far as these receivers, I mean, the position is wide open. I think rookie of the year is going to be a competitive situation too. Bowers going to the Raiders is really intriguing because of the middle of the field. And when you have Davante Adams on one side as well. So the whole position as a whole, Stormy, certainly there's an importance to it. And we saw that the NFL played that out with the draft. But, you know, I think there's a lot of guys in some unique situations and some great situations for later on this year.
Don't you think Harrison would be, other than Caleb Williams, would be the best play for offensive rookie of the year? He's going to get the ball. I mean, there's no question. And he's one of the best covered receivers in the draft. He's got great body control, great hands. Even if he's covered, he's open. He's gonna produce a lot of numbers, don't you think, Mike?
Yeah, I do. I really do. He's the only guy, right? He's the only show in town, really, as they say. And if you're the only show in town, you're going to be featured. And so I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to get that opportunity. Over in Chicago, you wonder if it does come together with Caleb and certainly commit and everybody they have an offense and Rome is lost in a shuffle. Rome is that Devontae Smith kind of player, right? Nobody's going to pay attention to him as they're paying attention to AJ Brown and others. And all of a sudden Rome is crushing you one-on-one against somebody else or same thing with T Higgins. And you think about Jamar Chase. I mean, the combinations of the younger players that Chicago has right now allows for Rome to be that surprise guy. But I agree with you. I mean, Marvin Harrison, he's a show. He's a big show in town, and he's definitely going to be featured that way in Arizona.
30 seconds, Pritch. We'll throw that Denver Broncos jersey up in the corner for a moment. One of your former teams. How'd you like the Bo Nix pick?
I was shocked by it. I didn't think it was going to happen. I think the run on quarterbacks scared Sean Payton and all that, which I don't know why. But they could have got him later on if they wanted to. But that's the guy that they wanted. So you can't fault him for that. Can they make it work? It's a high precision passing game. It's a short passing game, Bo Nix has been used to that for a number of years now. So maybe Sean Payton can make that work.
Yeah, we shall see. You're awesome, Pritch. Great to have you.
Great to be back with you guys.
Thanks, Pritch.
Thank you.
Mike Pritchard, former NFL wide receiver, always appreciate his time. We're going to hit the break, wrapping things up on the Lombardi line next. We'll be right back.